Hope you're having a great day, and welcome to Sports and a Slice of Life. I'm Dave Lewis. A lot going on in the NBA in this early part of the season. Trade rumors, surprise teams, and what's going on with the Golden State Warriors? Respect the opinion of NBA contributor and college basketball analyst Bill Herenda as we talk basketball. It has been way too long. How's everything going these days?
It's going well, Dave. Good to be back with you. And I want to wish all of your listeners a happy Thanksgiving. I can't believe it's already Thanksgiving on Thursday, but I'd remiss to not exchange that pleasantry with you and all your listeners.
You're the best. Hey, there's so much grist for the mill with this early NBA season. We'll start with the drama, if that's what we want to call it, with Golden State coming off three consecutive losses in Texas and no Draymond Green, fighting with Kevin Durant, no Steph Curry. What is your thought on what's going on with them?
Well, I think macro, Dave, this is a question of, is this a bump in the road or is this an implosion for the Warriors as we've come to know them? And I think, you know, the leadership from the front office and Steve Kerr to admit that, you know, just paraphrasing, that they're spiritually broken and dealing with injuries, of course.
We've had, you know, such a charmed existence the last four seasons. So, yeah, of course, this is the toughest stretch we've been in. But this is the real NBA, you know. We haven't been in the real NBA the last few years. We've been in this this dream. And so now we're faced with, you know, real adversity, and we got to get out of it ourselves.
What can be done to get the three-point shot going until Steph comes back?
We got to execute better. You know, I think there were a lot of possessions tonight where we were taking quick shots, and we needed more execution, more organization, where we got into our spots and, you know, called a set. I thought we had a lot of random possessions with quick shots. And, you know, a lot of times guys get frustrated and they're, you know, they want to shoot their way out of it. And I'm talking about the whole team. I'm not talking about Clay in particular. I'm just talking about everybody. You know, we've got to move the ball. We've got to trust each other. That's the hallmark of our team. We've got playmakers all over the floor. We've got guys who can, you know, dribble, pass, and shoot. And, you know, what we've done in the last few years is we've shared the ball. And the ball has moved, and we've gotten each other great shots. We're not getting great shots right now. We're taking a lot of contested shots.
Steve, when you're in the middle of it, like you were saying, what does it take to get out of it emotionally?
Everyone has to come together, and you can't feel sorry for yourselves. You have to commit to fighting and executing, competing for 48 minutes.
I think that's a very mature response to the situation they're in, and also to acknowledge that, hey, this is, again, paraphrasing, the real NBA, and he's had an unbelievable run, as have the Warriors. I think it's foolish to believe that teams don't have some type of dysfunction within them, regardless of their record and place in the standings, and this obviously has gone public. But I feel as though this is more, you know, trending towards, you know, a bump in the road than the implosion, because I think those guys realize how special it is what they have. And I think they'll be, you know, hungry to rekindle it, to get back to that level of play soon. And I think it'll become easier, of course, as the injuries subside to Green and also to Curry, of course.
Do you feel like this will be potentially a galvanizing type thing? Now it's going to be us against the world.
Well, you know what, Dave? That was my initial reaction to this. You're exactly right. So as you search and strive for things to play for, to play with purpose, and to not have, you know, this season of just beating people repeatedly, it does give them something to rally around, certainly. And I think that will be, you know, part of the mantra. And again, you don't have to love each other all the time. You're going to have your ups and downs, but this clearly is something that I think, you know, they will try to spin it that way internally. And you're right. Now they've got something to galvanize them in a hurry. And, you know, we heard Kerr talk about changing up the routine and, you know, maybe, you know, changing shoot around, not having shoot around. Well, now they've got their hands full and they've got an opportunity to play with purpose, to rally around it. I certainly agree with that.
I'm not really buying into his idea that he'll go to two-a-days and go old school.
Yeah, that was a great line. Yeah, he's so quotable. You know, he's so good with the media. Of course, having been in the media as an analyst, yeah, that was just classic. That was great.
What do you make of Durant struggles 1-for-17 on threes since the drama in Los Angeles?
Well, you know, the thing that strikes me about it, Dave, is how fragile, even for the 450 best players in the world, and arguably one of the best players in the world, can become rattled. So I think, you know, they're, offensively just, you know, out of whack and just not in the flow and forcing things. And I think that's just a byproduct of everything that's gone on through this week, which has been horrific for them. And I have, you know, on the eponymous BillHorrenda.com, I have a weekly recap of every NBA team, and included therein is, you know, the Anthony Slater tweet, you know, that chronicles everything that went horribly wrong with the Warriors this past week. And I think that's just, you know, part of this is a byproduct of that. And I think for so many of us, you know, it's 90% of life is how you react to what happens. And that's what the Warriors find themselves in right now, in the midst of some serious, of course, controversy, injuries, infighting, and what have you. So I think it'll be fascinating to watch this and see how it plays out.
If you had to take a guess how this turns out with the futures of both those players, Green and Durant, looking ahead into the Bill Horrenda crystal ball, what do you think happens? Does Durant bolt? Does Green leave because maybe he feels like the organization turned on him for suspending him? What do you think?
You know what, Dave? I think it's really premature to say exactly what's going to happen because there's so much that will occur moving forward. I think that, you know, when you look at Klay Thompson, to throw him in the mix, you know, I think he's a guy that really embodies in many ways what the Warriors are all about as far as being unselfish. And I think he's, you know, articulated the fact that he'd like to stay. I think that Durant, he has left before, of course. So it's likely that he could leave. And with Green, listen, I don't think anyone's untradeable. I mean, if it really disintegrates and goes poorly and they just can't find it, but my gut tells me that they will find a way to make this work over the rest of the season. And then just as Draymond recruited Durant initially, if they're in a place where they've, you know, patch this thing up and they know that they can work together, I'd expect Draymond to be perhaps first in line to try to keep him. That's my gut, but I could be wrong. I mean, you hear very credible, knowledgeable people like David Griffin, the former GM of the Cavaliers, who is absolutely terrific on SiriusXM NBAradio.com, who speaks about what a terrific job Sean Marks has done, for example, with the Brooklyn Nets and how that could be a great destination for a guy like Kevin Durant. But again, I have a feeling that they'll make this work for this season. And then as we get closer to the summer, we may have a better idea. But I think for Durant, he's got to judge like everyone does. The grass is always greener. They've got a good thing going. They had a good thing going. Perhaps they keep this thing going. We'll see.
Down in your neck of the woods in Los Angeles, a massive game for LeBron James, the 51 points, his return to South Beach. How do you see the Lakers trending in terms of, I don't think they're a championship contender, but where they figure in that pecking order of the Western Conference?
You know what, Dave? I'm sorry. I think I lost your audio there.
No problem. I was commenting on LeBron going off in his return to South Beach, the 51 points, and the Lakers playing pretty well. They won 7 out of 9. Where do you feel like they fit into the pecking order in the Western Conference?
Yeah, you know, Dave, it was almost so predictable, right, that LeBron would just go crazy. And, you know, I think Luke Walton reached a state on Saturday where does he go back to LeBron and some of the starters in Orlando yesterday, back-to-back for the Lakers, of course, and he was just sensational. I think for the Lakers, it really boils down to defense. I think where we've seen them struggle has been as far as cohesion goes, finishing games, that's been somewhat problematic for them early on. Defensive breakdowns. There's been a lot of talk about their three-point shooting. Could they use more shooting? Yes. But I've said this season that that's really the noise. It's really on the defensive end where they have to find it. I think certainly they'll contend for a playoff spot. That was kind of my feeling before the season ended. I would not put them up into the elite of the Western Conference. I do think that Tyson Chandler has been an excellent pickup for them to have another credible big and to have that type of rim protection in addition to JaVale McGee was a huge move for them. And you know what, Dave, when you look over the last 10 games, you know, their defensive rating is 15th in the league and they're 21st overall. So I think that's where we've seen the most improvement for the Lakers. You know, they're 5-1 versus teams that are under 500. They do have 4 wins versus teams that are 500 or above. 4 road wins. So, I mean, hey, LeBron is something special. And of course, just an absolute freak. And, you know, I use that in the best sense of the term. As a compliment.
Who has been your surprise team in this early season?
Well, you know what, Dave? I think, you know, you've got to look at teams like Memphis and Orlando as far as teams that are surprises. I thought that Denver as well as Milwaukee would be solid, although Denver has slumped a little bit lately. But those are some of the teams that have been surprising to me. And then also I'd have to go with the Sacramento Kings, that they're at 500. I certainly did not, you know, see that happening. And in Orlando, I mean, look at what Steve Clifford has done there. Now, Charlotte, the team he left, he was fired. James Borrego's done a fine job there as well. So he kind of left that in decent shape. And Orlando's won 7 of 9. They're 6-5 at home, 3-3 on the road, 3-1 in one possession games. They have 4 wins. They're 4-6 against teams that are 500 and above. I mean, that's incredible. Their offensive rating has really gone up over the last 10 games where they really struggled early. But to me, those are some of the surprise teams. And J.B. Bickerstaff has done a great job with Memphis. They're healthy. They defend. They play at a slow pace. They don't turn it over. And of course, Jaren Jackson Jr., you know, could be the steal or one of the steals of the draft.
That was a contrast in styles, their game with Sacramento, number 2 in the league in pace against a team that's been grinding it out for years, playing their style of ball. What do you make of the Kings and all their great young players and how they're trending?
Yeah, I think a big part of how well they've played, Dave, has just been Derrick Rose. You know, Derrick Rose.
We'll get to
Derrick Rose in a minute. Yeah, De'Aaron Fox. You know, I mentioned to Tom Looney on Mad Dog Sports Radio back in August of 2017. He asked me who I thought the Rookie of the Year could be. And I said, I think De'Aaron Fox could win the Rookie of the Year. And he's certainly playing at a tremendous level. His numbers across all categories are up. He's shooting the three ball better, which I think really causes a conundrum for the opposition, because if you can't go under screens against him, he becomes even more problematic for the opposition. Bagley, I think, has been solid. He's putting up solid numbers. And again, you know, what's interesting about Sacramento is that here they have great street cred and praise on Monday of last week from Greg Popovich after they popped the Spurs. But then they lose back-to-back Memphis and Houston, and during the game against Houston, there's a report from Yahoo Sports that Dave Yeager's job could be in trouble. So that, I believe, is unfortunate, because I think their challenge is on the floor as well as, you know, just having the stability and credibility through all constituencies, whether it's prospective free agents, agents, of course, just throughout the basketball world. But again, they've played well. Their pace, I think De'Aaron Fox pulled the Sacramento B as well, that part of the reason why they're playing better is they have an identity and they're going to play fast. I think especially for young players, if you have that, that makes coming to work every night a little bit easier. You know who you are, what you stand for, and what you're going to do. And again, it's been, you know, Bielitsa has been a boon from 3-point range, although his production and number of 3-point field goal attempts have dropped. Buddy Hield's been terrific. And I think for the opposition against Sacramento, what you want to do is get good shots. You know you can score, shoot a high percentage, make them take it out of the net. They're going to run on makes anyway. So there is a strategy for playing against them, and they're in a tough stretch right now. They're in the midst of six straight games against 500 and above teams against which they've struggled. Probably more than you bargained for, but just a few thoughts on Sacramento and what's going on there.
Well, it's just so bizarre with them having, you know, kind of a turnaround year. The reports that Jaeger could be on his way out, not playing Marvin Bagley Jr. enough and clashing with management. It seems like just the typical Kings dysfunction that we've heard over the last several years.
Yeah, and you know, Dave, I wrote about it because I was covering the team quite closely when they fired Michael Malone after the team started 9-5 and they fired him at 11-13. And that was a surprise, and you felt as though Malone was winning given the roster that he had, and also the fact that he had a very good relationship with the mercurial DeMarcus Cousins. But they fired him, and it was over a philosophical difference in the style of play, with Pete D'Alessandro wanting to play faster and Malone, you know, kind of being a defensive, and I'm going to say this and I'm going to contradict myself, being a defensive coach. I'm using the air quotes, right? And now we see him playing at a fast pace and being successful in Denver. And then we see Jaeger, who was grit and grind in Memphis, and he's successful in Sacramento playing faster. So maybe we should just come to a point where either guys can coach and gals can coach, or they can't. So whether this has any credibility, I mean, it's a credible reporter, of course, Chris Haynes with Yahoo Sports with the report. I'm sure that there is discussion and dialogue, which is healthy for any organization, as to how much guys are playing. Should they be playing more or less, rotations, trying to find all that stuff out? I don't think that I would encourage, of course, them to do that. But to get to the point where it would threaten Jaeger's stability and his job, I don't think I'd pull the trigger on that. And this is a guy that they already extended through next season. So it's definitely unfortunate that would take away from what has been a great turnaround story in Sacramento to this point of the season. But again, I think everything, the whole conversation we're having, is important to recognize that, you know, as you know, Dave, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. And we're getting closer now to that 20-game interval. And I think now GMs and coaches and coaching staffs around the league are getting, you know, a good flavor of what their squads are, what they look like, their strengths, their weaknesses, their opportunities, and their threats, just like a good Harvard Business School study.
Well, obviously, you know, the coaches and the management have to be on the same page as to what the mission is, which takes me to Atlanta and my good friend Lloyd Pierce with that young basketball team there. And they're in that process mode like they did in Philadelphia, playing the young kids. But when it's time to win, he'll put his best guys on the court.
Right. And that's, I think, for teams that are rebuilding, that becomes, like you said, just a matter of alignment and how are guys going to get better as young players if they're not, you know, in those types of situations. So I think there's sometimes a steep learning curve, especially defensively, for guys in the league. And you have to, as a coach, find that balance of, yes, definitely, you know, trying to win and also at the same time trying to develop players. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. Not all learning and development occurs in game. So you're right. You could have a rookie on the floor that you don't have confidence in this particular situation that could blow a defensive assignment and you lose. Whereas you could have a veteran on the floor, the rookie watching and learning, and you win. So you tell me, what is the best outcome and what is the best scenario? Probably winning and learning, ideally with the guy on the floor. But I think that's the balance that coaches like Lloyd Pierce have to strike as they, you know, emerge in their careers, moving over that one seat.
I would think that for the morale of the team, when you're in a competitive situation, and the game I'm talking about was Atlanta playing at Golden State, and Trae Young was having a rough game. Jeremy Lin played great down the stretch, had a chance to make it a one-possession game. Warriors ended up winning by 7. But I think it sends a message to the team, hey, this is a competitive situation. I'm not throwing just the kids out there because we're trying to build and suck for 3 years. Hey, you're a pro. If you've earned the minutes, we're going to give them to you.
Yeah, and you know, Dave, I abhor the whole tanking, you know, mentality and strategy and what have you. I just can't stomach that. And yeah, I mean, I think it's critical that that you're playing to win every night. Certainly, the players are going to do that. Whoever's on the floor, it's a very fickle, unforgiving league, and I think that really stands for everyone that's involved, players and coaches, that you've got to bring your A game as you know, as frequently as you can. And again, UB Brown will say, right, like, listen, there are 3 or 4 times a season that you've got to accept what happened and move on. You know what I'm saying? You have those nights. We all have those nights. But by and large, that's the coaching staff's challenge, is to, you know, find the right players, the right combinations, and put their players in a position to win every night. And you make a good point, Dave, too, that to maintain, you know, credibility, again, in every direction is critical, whether it's with management, ownership, players, media, staff, colleagues. That's vital. That's vital to someone's career.
Who do you like in the East going into the season? Everybody was saying Boston or Toronto, but there's some other things that have happened over the last few weeks. The trade of Jimmy Butler to Philadelphia, the resurgence or emergence of Milwaukee.
Yeah, I think, you know, I really like, you know, Toronto a lot, and the way Nick Nurse is deployed Serge Ibaka, and he's really thrived not playing with Valanciunas on the floor. And also, Dave, you know, Kawhi Leonard has just been, you know, healthy, engaged, such a terrific two-way player. Danny Green has been good for them as well. We knew how good Toronto's bench was last year. Pascal Siakam is, you know, another guy that's really emerged. And in Milwaukee, I'm not surprised, because you just had the feeling with Budenholzer that, you know, he's obviously a successful head coach in his own right, another Popovich disciple. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk about offensively and their spacing, and I get that. But their improvement defensively has been, you know, absolutely terrific. They're in the top 10 in of course, offensive and defensive rating, and they're leading the league in differential. And, you know, that one win they had, too, you know, in Denver on the last game of a road trip in the altitude, where they just took care of business, kind of struck me, too, as somewhat of a defining moment early, you know, that they were, you know, certainly for real. And then Philly, you know, with Jimmy Butler now, we saw it was unbelievable the other night. You know, he gets the block, the save, the three, and he downs Charlotte and Kemba Walker 60 points. So there could be, you know, some special stuff brewing there in Philly. And again, I think, you know, I've been impressed with Indiana, too. You know, Oladipo has been sensational again. And they're a team that they play slow. They don't turn it over. They turn you over. They make free throws. You know, they're just a good, solid team. You know, Boston has been a question early of their offense. And we saw their offense, Kyrie went bananas on Friday night, and that overtime win against Toronto. Their defense remains great, leading the league in efficiency defensively. So I think there are a handful of teams in the East. And I would agree with you, Dave, that it's fascinating to really watch and see who's going to emerge in the East. And then, of course, in the West, too, I think it's another caveat to everything that, you know, who would have thought that the Warriors would be somewhat vulnerable at this junction of the season? You know, the pendulum swings so wildly, and I think never too high, never too low is probably a good mantra, particularly at any time of the season, but particularly now.
Looking at a couple of the league stories, Bill, Washington has fallen off the map, and they were one of the teams expected to contend in the East with that dynamic backcourt of Wall and Beal. Now there are reports that either of those guys, maybe both, could be on the trading block.
Yeah, that's kind of a mess, Dave. That's a team that has looked uninspired, and you know they've got some really difficult contracts as well. So I don't know, but, you know, I can't argue against breaking it up. You know what I mean? I think Scott Brooks is a great coach, but again, we could go through the numbers, but then visually how they've looked, just, you know, and now Dwight Howard, was hurt. Now he's hurt again. He got hurt yesterday. So I'm not sure what his status or what type of impact he would have had, if he'd been healthy. But you know, even over the last 10 games, I mean, 25th in defensive rating, 27th overall on the season. And a lot of these numbers just kind of look and are, you know, kind of effort numbers that just have not been there. So perhaps blowing it up. I mean, maybe they should have thought a little bit more about this as Jimmy Butler was available. So, you know, they kind of obviously missed the boat there. If that was someone that, was on their radar, but, I don't know. I don't know what the solution is in Washington, but they sure have struggled.
And you mentioned some of the numbers, some that are mind blowing, like Otto Porter owed $81 million over 3 years. And then when Wall's extension kicked in, that's going to be another like $44 million a year. So you have contracts that are tough to move, even if you wanted to make moves.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know if what that looks like. I mean, you know, we know that Phoenix has been in the market for a point guard. Could Orlando use help at the point guard position, right? I mean, I'm sure they could. But you're right, Dave. That throws up another potential barrier. You know, you hear people talk about Wall maybe with Anthony Davis in New Orleans, right, as far as the Kentucky guys playing together. So I'm sure there'll be a lot of dialogue on it, but for Washington, I mean, this has clearly been a big disappointment, and I don't see. I think a lot of it is just within that locker room. You know, they've just got to decide if they're going to get right, or if they're just going to continue to kind of flounder and play in a way that just kind of lacks purpose. We hear that a lot from NBA coaches, to play with purpose, and they certainly haven't thus far.
What do you make of the Carmelo Anthony situation? Do you think he's finished?
Well, you know what? I think that there are teams that – I wrote about this. I think there are teams that, if you look at Memphis, teams that don't play particularly fast, that are kind of lagging offensively, could potentially be fixed for Carmelo. Miami is another team that I think could be, you know, could use him. But I think, again, I'd have to think long and hard about that acquisition. You know, you get him cheap at the veterans minimum. But I wrote about this on my webpage. You know what's very interesting, Dave, is that when Chris Paul made the transition from the Clippers to the Rockets, his percentage of field goals attempted from the mid-range dropped from like 40% to like 25%. Carmelo, although it's a very small sample size, the percentage of his shots outside the restricted area but within the three-point line was like 57% still. So this is a team that obviously they're at the rim and getting to the free throw line, or they're shooting threes. And we know that the highest percentage shot, you know, the highest value shots are at the free throw line, at the rim, and from three, specifically the corner threes. And it just didn't seem like, you know, he was able to adjust to that as far as habits go, okay, on the floor habits. But again, a small sample size. And then the other part of it, too, is, and they said in their statement that he accepted any role that was given. So I think for him, right, that's got to be the adjustment to accept the role that he's given. And also, can he adjust his, you know, mid-range game to today's NBA?
I don't know of many people that thought that was a great signing. He's not a great defender. The ability to switch 1 through 5 and a standstill 3-point shooter is not something that's a part of his game. He's a scorer. He's a volume shooter.
Right. And you know what, Dave? I think that, and there's a great article that was written before the season that I included in my article, okay? And basically, the premise was Stephen Shea. It was on ShotTracker.com. And the premise that I used and piggybacked off his article that he wrote before the season started was, if he had adjusted, perhaps this would have worked. You know what I'm saying, Dave? Like a high-volume shooter, if he was taking the right shots and if he was spotting up off of Harden's penetration, Chris Paul's penetration. But you make a good point. There is no way, and this is bigger than Melo too, that defensively, you're right, losing Ariza, Bahamute, Jeff Bizdelic, who's a defensive wizard, who will be back with D'Antoni on the bench. He was not going to make up for losing those guys. But I was skeptical, but, I'm one of these guys who, I hope everybody wins. It pains me when my friends in the coaching profession are losing. I always see the glass as half full, and I think I kind of lean towards that with Carmelo here in Houston. But I think it's good, though, that they pulled the plug early, and I give Morey credit for that and D'Antoni, and I think that's better. Don't let it fester, and it's better for Carmelo, too, to move on. And I don't know, Dave, if he's going to end up playing in China, if he's going to retire, or if some of those teams we talked about, Charlotte's another one, Charlotte, Memphis, Miami. I think there are some people that will entertain bringing him on. I'm just not sure if it's going to happen. I'm not sure I would do it, to be candid, as a GM.
That's got to be a pretty humbling situation for him. This is a guy that's a multi-time All-Star, multi-time Olympian, eventual Hall of Famer, and being unable to find the right fit, not working out in OKC and Houston. Like, where do I fit in now? Am I a dinosaur in this game because I don't shoot threes? I don't defend 1 through 5. I mean, he seems to be like a guy from a different era.
Well, you know what, Dave? It's a good question. And I think that this is, again, the never too high, never too low mantra, because look at a guy like Derrick Rose, who I know you want to talk about. So, it's such a long season that maybe Carmelo could find, the right fit with a team that's, contending for a playoff spot, or, so it could change in a hurry. And I think that's sometimes the beauty of sports. Everyone loves that comeback story, and from rags to riches, and perhaps he'll have that type of turnaround, which, wouldn't surprise, listen, nothing surprises me any longer. You know what I'm saying? Like, you talked about Jaeger getting fired. Is he going to get fired? I don't know if he's going to get fired. I wouldn't fire him, but he could. I mean, you just never know. And that, in a way, is what makes sports so fascinating. So we could be talking in a couple of months about Carmelo's resurgence.
Since you mentioned Derrick Rose, and I'll ask you if you have a single moment or a single game that stands out in your mind. But for me, him going for 50 points when it looked like maybe a year ago he's going to be out of the league, to me, that was something that I'll never forget.
Derrick, 2011 MVP, Rhodes!
Everybody just streams out on the floor to greet him, show him the respect. And they all know what this means to him. They know what he's lost and now what he's trying to find. What a great moment for Derrick Rose and all the stuff that he's been through, too.
You could not have scripted a better ending to this game for the Timberwolves. And you see the emotion on Derrick Rose's face. A 50-point effort to get the Timberwolves a gutty win over the Utah Jazz.
Derrick Rose! You can see you're very emotional. A huge victory for this team, and it comes from you and your career high 50 points. What does it mean to you, Derrick?
Man, everything, man. I worked my ass off, bro. I wouldn't have did this for the franchise, the organization, the fans, everybody, man. I wouldn't be able to play the way I play, man.
We weren't sure if it was the throwback jersey you were wearing, but you did look like Derrick Rose of old. And what did it feel like going through from beginning to end?
I'm doing anything just to win, man. I play my heart out. My teammates told me before the game, just play my game. And tonight was a hell of a night.
What does it say about this team that seemed unnerved when you found out that you were going to be down two starters and you guys jumped right away at the start of this game under your energy and didn't stop at all? What does it say about this team?
We got a young group. My job is to come in, be the veteran, help guys out, lead by example. You see me talking. It's the most I ever talked to my teammates in my whole career. So it means a lot.
Crowds are thankful for you, Derek. Congratulations on a huge night.
Thank
you deserve it.
Yeah, that was pretty. And I think, you know, what made that so special, Dave, right, was just how emotional he was after the game. And, you know, yesterday during their game, I thought this was really interesting. Jim Peterson, the Timberwolves color analyst, does a terrific job. He's one of those guys that you're, you know, watching and learning all the time. But this is his quote, and I tweeted it out. And he said, Derrick Rose is one of the most singularly unique players in the history of the NBA, given his pedigree, where he's at, his age right now, and what he's been able to accomplish in a Timberwolves uniform. An insane list for your resume. And he cited, you know, the being a former MVP, the 50-point game, the minimum contract, all of those types of things. And you know what? When you look at him, even though, Dave, they lost to Memphis, by the way, yesterday, 100-87 at home. You know, you look at Derrick Rose, Peterson talks about how his quickness is back, the explosion, his ability to finish, you know, at the peak of his career has been phenomenal, and that appears to be back. And, you know, this is a guy over his career who has shot 30% from three, and right now he's shooting 47%. With Minnesota. So, you know, I think the question becomes, can he sustain it? You know, is this, you know, does he have the durability to do it? And at 30 years old and fighting through injuries and a couple of stops along the way, he's back with Tibbs and thriving. So it's definitely one of the great stories thus far this NBA season.
You've always got such great takes, Billy. How can people follow you, follow your insights, read what you do?
Yeah, so you know, that's real simple, at Bill Herenda on Twitter, and then the eponymous BillHerenda.com webpage where I'm writing, you know, on different things. So that's, you know, Oscar Wilde said that, you know, some people cause pleasure wherever they go, others whenever they go. So I'm trying to stay in that former group. So I'm out there and about, but hopefully not too much. You know, I think I'm good in a little bit smaller doses.
What are your Thanksgiving plans?
you know what, they're just getting together with family and friends and looking forward to it. I can't believe it's here, that's for sure. But I think, you know, it's a tough world out there, a lot going on. And, you know, I'm rooting for peace and harmony and people to get along and people to just have the opportunity to pursue life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So I'm just rooting for that for everyone here and around the world, and hoping that 2019 is going to be a great year. But again, time flies. I can't believe it's the holiday season. So I hope you and yours have a great Thanksgiving, Dave. I'm sure you will.
Appreciate it, Billy. You're the best. We'll do this again.
Absolutely, Dave. Thanks so much.
Thanks to NBA contributor Bill Herenda. You can follow his work at BillHerenda.com. Also on Twitter and Instagram at Bill Herenda. The executive producer of the podcast is Hunter Lewis. You can subscribe on iTunes and Google Play. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. We'll be right back.
Thank you.